in an English accent, a London accent, say the two words beer and can.
No, my accents are terrible.
Give it a shot.
Okay. But I can't. This is embarrassing. Bear con. Does that not say that doesn't sound like it.
Words are not coming out of my mouth yet because I'm processing this. So
I warned you.
You know,
I warned you.
London accent would be like beer can.
Okay.
Which is how you say bacon if you're in Jamaica.
Where are you learning this? Who is teaching you these things?
I have weird hobbies.
Oh my goodness.
Welcome to the Mostly Money Podcast with your host, Preet Banerjee.
I don't know if you've listened to my podcast. I'm very laissez-faire. So, you know, if you want to tell a joke.
I was like, we got to do something so that there's that little part in the very beginning where it's the ad-libbed,
the funny
outtakes.
Thing? Okay, yeah. So I have something for that.
Oh, already? You plan your outtakes?
I don't plan my outtakes.
Taking the magic out of it.
I do not plan the outtakes. There are no outtakes. It's just funny stuff that happens organically.
Okay.
But I just came across this the other day. So say the words space and ghetto.
Space ghetto?
That's how a Scottish person says Spice Girl.
What? Space ghetto. Space ghetto. Oh my God.
Right?
I will add that to the other very useful things that I know.
Okay, here's another one.
Okay.
How's your English accent?
All of my accents sound the same. Terrible.
Oh. Okay, so.
Like Borat.
Okay, well, we'll give it a shot. So in an English accent, a London accent, say the two words beer and can.
No, my accents are terrible.
Give it a shot.
Okay. But I can't. This is embarrassing. Bear con. Does that not say that doesn't sound like it.
Words are not coming out of my mouth yet because I'm processing this. So
I warned you.
You know,
I warned you.
London accent would be like beer can.
Okay.
Which is how you say bacon if you're in Jamaica.
Where are you learning this? Who is teaching you these things?
I have weird hobbies.
Oh my goodness. Are we just offending so many people out there right now?
Possibly, but you know what? I feel we have some license because, you know, we're not white males.
We're visible minorities.
Mm. There you go.
All right.
Okay, you know what? I think that was great. That'll be the intro before the podcast starts.
My terrible accents. Just, if there's one thing that I'm terrible at, that's
see, we found one thing that you can't do. That's
one
good
thing
because
I'm terrible at.
You're great at so many other things.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome to Mostly Money. I'm your host, Preet Banerjee. And on the show today, I'll be joined by Melissa Leong, who has a new book coming out on January 8th, 2019, called Happy Go Money. And so we're going to see why this is a personal finance book you should put on your shelves. And now, as usual, before I introduce Melissa, let me give a shout out to some listeners who have left comments on iTunes. Darl C, Mostly Man-Made, Nader B, who I actually ran into at a Loblaws parking lot as I was doing my groceries. He pulled over his minivan and ran over to me and said, "Hey, you're Preet Banerjee from Mostly Money and YouTube." I was like, yeah. He's like, "I'm a big fan." I'm like, "That is so cool, dude." It was weird. At the beginning, I thought, what have I done? Why is this person running at me? But he was a cool guy.
That's
we had a
lovely.
Great conversation. Oh, it was so nice. It was so nice. So Natter?
Or you. I wear my pajamas when I go to the grocery store.
Do you?
So do you look, you're in a three-piece suit when you go to the grocery store?
Right. Yeah. So I know it's weird. I am in a full suit. I don't normally do that for podcasts because it's a audio medium. But
Preet opens the door and he looks like he's going to the Oscars. And I think, what is going on?
Yeah, well, so I can explain. So I've just started using a new automatic calendar scheduling app. And this is to replace an AI assistant that I used to use. And
yes.
I'll blame Peter Aceto, former CEO of Tangerine, for putting me onto this AI assistant. Because I would, you know, just CC my emails to this AI assistant and they would take over booking with whoever. And there was all this back and forth and everyone who used it was like, this is the worst thing ever. So I
liked her.
Really?
Oh.
Oh, that's right. I used her on you.
Not
it.
It. Them. I just called her.
Yeah.
It had a woman's name. Your robot had a woman's name, didn't it?
Yeah. It was, how did it work?
I thought it was helpful,
the
to be
initials
honest.
Were AI. It was Amy Ingram.
There you go. Right. I thought it was helpful.
It was. It worked for you, but that was like the one outlier. Like
oh,
the rest of it, it
okay.
was like, it was awful. So anyway, so I was replacing it with this new one. And when you set up your preferences, I forgot to put the preferences, which is like the buffer before and after. So it allows people to pick spots in my calendar with no travel time or buffer or whatever. So I'm so under the gun today because all the meetings today are like back to back with like no travel time. So anyways, that was a long, long tirade. Where was I? Oh, right. Natter B. So I met this guy in the parking lot. Okay. And who else? And Mountain Air. So thank you all to everyone who have left comments on iTunes. If you haven't done so yet, I really do appreciate you taking 5 seconds to leave a rating on iTunes. And if you want to take the additional time to write in a comment on top of that, I do read them all. And now, without further ado, on to today's guest, who has set a new high bar for guests on the podcast already. Scott Terrio, who came on to talk about everything about bankruptcy and debt and whatnot, brought a lovely bottle of whiskey. But you have actually topped that by bringing a bottle of whiskey, and you brought in these glasses, these whiskey tumblers that are custom engraved with the name of the show, Mostly Money.
That's right. That's how I roll.
That's unbelievable.
It's to express my gratitude for all of your support over the years.
Oh, my God.
And it was very inappropriate for I'm 7 months pregnant. I'm standing in LCBO trying to pick whiskeys or scotch. I have no idea about any of those things. And
you did good, kid.
I hope you enjoy it.
You did good, kid.
Good.
Yeah, after my meetings today, I will I'll drink it in earnest. Yeah, but that was so nice of you. And just as, you know, for people who are listening who may be guests one day, you don't have to do this, but it is pretty nice. Okay. So now let me give everyone your bio. So Melissa, you are a personal finance writer, an on-air personality, a keynote speaker, a best-selling author. You're the author of the Feel Good Finance Guide, which is coming out, called Happy Go Money. And you're the resident money expert on Canada's leading daytime talk show, The Social, on CTV. And your articles have appeared in newspapers across the country, including as the personal finance writer for the Financial Post. And you had, I don't know if you're still doing that, awesome video series for the Post where you would dress up as superheroes and...
I don't do that anymore.
Oh my God, those were so
but
great.
But that was fun. That's when you end up somewhere and you say, hey guys, I'm going to do some videos for you. Is that okay? And you have no oversight. And your editors say, yeah, go for them. Let's do whatever you want. And yeah, I just took pies in the face and dressed up in ridiculous outfits, all in the name of financial literacy. So
right.
It was for a good cause.
That's why we all do it.
Not just making me look like, you know, an idiot. Just just to help people. That's what I'm all about.
Well, here's your official welcome to the show. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm excited to chat with you. Unfortunately, because of this calendar mix-up, we don't have a lot of time, but you also have to pick up your son. So this isn't going to be as long as a normal podcast, which sometimes go an hour and a half, especially when there's alcohol involved.
Oh.
But we're both sober.
For you, I can't drink. That's not okay.
Oh, well, I mean, the whiskey cam is right there if you want. You can help yourself. let's start with your background. So we covered a lot. I mean, you've obviously accomplished a lot, but let's start from, say, you graduated high school. Tell us, the Coles notes of how you went from, your undergrad to having this passion for personal finance and all the opportunities that you find yourself landed in today.
So when I was raised by two of the cheapest people in Canada, they are first generation immigrants. And
wait, are you my sister? I'm kidding.
Proudly, I would be. And so that's my interest in money. It started with just being crazy frugal.
What do you mean crazy frugal? Give me an example of the craziest frugal thing.
Okay, it's not crazy, but embarrassing. Let's see. I'm the person who waits in line for 20 minutes at the fair to get a free popsicle. If I go into a fancy restaurant and they have really, really nice, you know, paper towels, I'll put some extra ones in my purse.
Oh.
And then when I leave, my mom will meet me in the car and say, look what I got from this nice restaurant. And the two of us have gotten really nice basically paper towels were just so ridiculously cheap. But with, well, in the journey of writing my book, I have discovered other ways that will increase my happiness in life.
Now, so, you didn't grow up in a household where you did something draconian like, listen, there's a family rule. We only flush the toilet once a day.
Oh, no.
Because that's a thing.
I know it's a thing. So is reusing your dental floss. So it wasn't like that. You know, we weren't hoarding. We weren't doing any kind of extreme couponing.
But you're just being liberal with your use of paper towels.
My mom and I would just sacrifice our own happiness for things. So my father would come in with the expensive toilet paper and we would have a fit. We're like, no, that toilet paper is too expensive. It's too soft. We will use the sandpaper toilet paper to save 2 cents.
Right.
That's what we would do. But obviously on my journey of trying to find a happier way of life, that's not always the best thing to do.
No, happy bum, happy life. That's my motto.
Yeah.
Okay, so
let's talk. So from there, I went to Ryerson and graduated with a journalism degree.
Okay.
Not because I cared about money, because they told me on my first day of school that if you want to make money, here, there's the door. So I was in it for, you know, just I had the idealistic, this, you know, I went in as a starry-eyed 18-year-old who wanted to save the world. You know,
right.
Wanted to be a war correspondent and all those things. And I ended up I wrote for every section of the newspaper. I did crime, terrorism, arts, movies, travel, Queen's Park. I did government. And I ended up in business.
Interesting.
At the Financial Post, where I became the personal finance expert. Or the personal finance writer there.
And how did that come about? Did someone just say, hey, we need someone to fill in this role? And that's how it happened? Or did you sort of say, this is what I want to do?
Well, newspapers were downsizing, as they are.
What?
And I majored in newspapers because I thought it would last forever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
good
what
call.
I... Mm-hmm. That was the things that you would do differently if you knew.
Right,
But no, I was working in arts and life at the time. It was my dream job. I loved it. And they cut the section.
Oh.
And so my editors, they were trying to help me at the time, but obviously in the moment I was devastated. But they said, we want to move you to a place that is growing. So we want to move you to FP, which is Financial Post.
And how long were you there?
Oh, seven. I was there for seven. I was at the Financial Post for a total of 12 years.
Mm-hmm. And on the personal finance beat for
maybe
seven?
Half, yeah.
About half that? Okay. So where did you get the idea for the concept of this book? Because this is a very different personal finance book.
Yes.
And one of the challenges, I think, is, you know, when you're sitting down to think about, oh, I need to write a personal finance book, a lot of people will think, all right, so what do I tell people what to do? You need to do X, Y, Z.
Right.
And give them some rules or whatever. And so when it comes to personal finance, you know, everything that can be written about it has pretty much been written about it. Like,
yes.
Like the rules of personal financial success, the fundamentals, not a lot really changes over time. But your book is different. So where did you get the idea for this book?
So this book has been floating around in my head for probably about 7 years, and it just didn't find a home. It didn't find a place because it didn't have an anchor, right? It didn't have that thing that makes it special or was...
Like a differentiator.
Yeah. You know, I had general advice to give and I wanted to help people, but this book is specifically about trying to find happiness. So if money is just a tool to try to make you happy, you know, are you actually using your money to be happy?
Right.
It's kind of like when people say, oh, I want to be confident. I'm going to really work on my self-esteem in the new year. And they're going to do that through Botox and exercise. So if your goal is to be confident, well, then let's have a conversation about whether or not you're doing the right things. So if your goal is to be happy, are you managing and spending your money in a way that will actually make you happy?
Yeah, so maybe we skipped ahead. So the title of the book we've talked about a couple of times, it's Happy Go Money.
Yes.
And so give us a sense of why this book is different. Like, how did you write it? There's a lot of study. So talk about how this book is different from the reader's perspective.
As you said, there are a lot of personal finance guides out there. And I wanted to also... I wanted to have a, this is going to sound like it's a Deepak Chopra blog post and we're going to just get all touchy-feely, but it's not because I'm a journalist. A lot of the, everything that I say in the book is backed up by some sort of research or science. And so if we're going to talk about this is how you structure your money, well, then why are you doing it that way? And so the first third of the book talks a lot about positive psychology. It talks about behavioral economics, just about why we do the things that we do. To make sure that you are spending your money in a way that is actually in line with your values. Money is stressful. You know, everyone is, we're trying to chase money. We're trying to get that raise. We're trying to make more money. And you're stressed. You're unhappy. Well, why the heck are you unhappy? Why are you killing yourself getting that extra dollar? Mm-hmm. Why? Let's have a scientific conversation about it.
Yeah, so this is what was really interesting for me, because I'm kind of in like this literature review mode for my research at school. And so everything that you write down has to have some kind of source. You can't just sort of say things. There's not a lot of room for conjecture. It's, you know, here's what's been done, and you have to build a case as to why you're asking the question that you're asking. And your book is littered with so many references and to studies and academic research looking at happiness. And you talk to a lot of professors. But what's really good, so I don't want to intimidate people, it's not like there's this, you know, a section with 200 references.
No.
You just sort of say there was a study out of so-and-so university, and here's what they found, right? And you really distill down to here is the important thing that you need to take away and how it applies to your happiness and your finances. So it's really, really cool. So I wanted to talk to you about a couple of items in the book. So there's one section called The Magic Number. Mm-hmm. How much money do we need to earn to be happy? And so I'm sure a lot of people, you know, they're with their friends, they're just chatting, and they're like, well, what do you think would be the number? But there's actually been some studies that suggest what that number might be. So why don't you tell us about that?
So the latest number out of 2008, it's a Purdue University study that says that once you hit $95,000 US, that's per family, single family income, pre-tax, any more money above that does not mean more life satisfaction. It actually is associated with a decrease in happiness, which is very interesting. And so that is life satisfaction. That's you judging your life on a whole. In terms of day-to-day happiness, which you and I sort of think about as, you know, how we feel right now, how we'll feel tomorrow, that is, that those magic numbers fall between $60,000 and $75,000 US. Mm-hmm. So once you make that, not necessarily more happiness comes.
Now, okay, so let's take a look at that in the context of the different cities that we live in. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you know, 65,000-70,000 in Toronto, you're going to be pretty stressed, right?
Yes.
So I think there's maybe a grain of salt there, because I didn't read that study that you're referencing, but when you look at average incomes and average house prices, say in the US, I'm sure the Purdue study is probably looking at, you know, some populations in the US. Someone was telling me the other day about a house that a colleague bought that was like $150,000 on an acre of land, four bedrooms or something like that in, I don't know, somewhere in Arizona or something like that. And obviously you would not find that in the urban core of Toronto or Vancouver. Do you have a sense, like if you were to shoot from the hip, or I don't know if you know some research at the top of your head, about what do you think that number might be in like a city like Toronto or Manhattan or something like that?
That is a really good question. I think probably the 95,000 US
minimum
is probably a better figure to go from. I think the point of that research and those numbers is to tell to show you that you need to cover your bases.
Right.
So you need to be able to eat, sleep, you know, have a roof over your head, be able to find have meaningful work, but that's not the end all be all, right? Afterwards, once your basic needs are met, that's when you start focusing on things that make you actually unhappy, where you're acquiring stuff and comparing yourself to other people, when you're taking on more work and you're becoming more stressed. And that's why there is this decline in happiness that's associated with more money.
And another way that we can be happier with our financial situations is another section called you should buy a hot tub time machine or spend money on time savers. So what do you mean by that? Did you see the movie Hot Tub Time Machine?
I did.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I like it. Yeah.
I really like both of them. There's two of them. Okay, so there is research, I think it was as recent as last year, that shows a link between people who value time over money, they are happier people. Mm-hmm. And if you actively value time over money, it will make you happy. It will boost your happiness level. And so, you know, I've tried to take this very seriously. Hence the not waiting in line for 20 minutes anymore for the free popsicle, because my husband is the exact opposite of me. He'll say, I will walk to the store and buy you a whole box in the time that you're standing here waiting. And so it's just to put a value on your time. So that's when I walked away from my $65,000 a year salary at the National Post to buy 2,610 more hours with my son
right. When
he was born.
Right.
And it was worth it to me.
Right. Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, one of the themes that I think runs throughout the book, so I've had the privilege of seeing an advanced copy, is you keep tying back the connection to your overall lifestyle, and you kind of put money not on the back burner, but it's not central. It's a tool, like you said at the beginning, because you really have to figure out what is it that you want and what are the things that make you happy. Like for me, example, I have pretty simple tastes sometimes, and other times not so simple. So for example, one of my biggest pleasures in life is having a nice cup of coffee. And it used to be on a nice sunny day, hopping on my motorcycle and just riding out, maybe finding a coffee shop and just people watching the world go by as I have a coffee and then have a nice leisurely ride back.
So spend your money there, right?
Well, my motorcycle got stolen, Melissa, so...
Oh.
Yes.
Where's this story going?
I know. I'm still kind
insurance?
Of sad about it.
Question mark.
Well, there is. I actually ended up making a few thousand bucks on it because the insured value was higher than the price that I paid for
and
it.
And you got a new one, right?
No. I'm. It's a long story, but no. I do have.
Well, if you wanted to be happy, you'd be spending it on experiences like the things that you enjoy, hence your coffee and your motorcycle. So
right,
something
yeah.
for 2019, maybe?
Anyways, yeah. So I'll digress a little bit and say that. So simple pleasures, you know, coffee,
yes.
naps in the middle of the day. Big
yes.
fan of naps, especially when the sun is coming in and, you know, falling asleep with the sun on your face. Oh my God, there's nothing better. There's nothing better. So simple things. These things don't cost a lot of money, but they drive a lot of my happiness. So I don't actually need a lot of money to be happy. So it's good. So I consciously think about these things. But I think one of the reasons for that is about 12 years ago, I was really ill to the point that I really thought I was going to die. And that really changed your perspective on what you think is valuable in life. Mm. And all the things that your long-term plans about career and whatnot, your perspective totally changes
right.
when you're faced with your mortality, right? And ever since then, I've really been more present focused in terms of, you know, hedonism and whatnot. Anyways, so...
No, I'm glad you brought that up too, because you asked me earlier what the catalyst for my book was, and it really took... It came from a place where it probably came from one of the worst periods of my life, is that my husband and I had just gotten married and he got a prescription for sleeping pills and he had a terrible reaction to them. So he became anxious, depressed, and he had suicidal ideation. He was hospitalized. And in that time, Sean is extremely happy. He's a very happy, mm-hmm. hilarious person, loves to laugh. And in that time, while he was going through hell, I just tried to be happy. So I was, you know, I was going to Buddhist temples. I was going to retreats. I was reading every book I could find on positive psychology. I was listening to hours upon hours of lectures from monks and resilience experts. And so what I learned about happiness and what I know about personal finance basically came together in this book. And I learned, and when we're talking about sort of perspective, is that more money in that situation would not have made my husband any better.
Right.
But money, having your money crap not in order mm-hmm. would have made that time just
even worse.
Unbearable.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a good connecting theme. And that personal story, when I was reading that, it made you realize this is not your typical personal finance book. I, you know, going through that, it's like, I think I mentioned this to you before, it's like you're the money BFF you didn't know you needed. right?
Oh, I love that you said that.
Yeah, no, it's a great book, hard to put down. It's engaging. It's a great style to it. I really, really am a big fan of this book. The last sort of section of the book, because I don't want to give it all away, people have to buy it, is I want to talk to you about budgeting. So this is one of those areas where everyone has an idea on budgeting. And I think most people would recognize that cash flow management is like the foundation of most of your financial decisions and ability and flexibility with respect to a lot of areas of your life. So what's your take on budgeting?
You say the word budgeting and everybody just groans. See? I just groaned ahead of it. I just groaned myself.
Here's my answer.
I don't think people need to budget every day of their lives. You know, some people think, well, I bought a pack of gum or whatever it is. Let me write this down or put in my
app. I need a receipt for that, please.
Yes. No, the point, we're trying to be happy. We're not trying to nickel and dime ourselves and obsess over every penny we spend. And so I'd rather call it a spending plan. The plan is just to look, obviously, at the inflow and the outflow, and then create a plan so that, okay, you know what? I need this much for, this is how I do my finances anyways. I need this much for my needs, for my fixed expenses, my bills. I need this much for my savings, for various priorities, charity, whatever it is. And then I'm going to siphon out an amount every 2 weeks into a separate no-fee account for fun. And so whatever is in that account, I spend it mm-hmm. for fun.
Right.
I take my friends out. I can't buy you a motorcycle, but I could bring you scotch.
Oh, yeah. No,
stay. I can take you for fancy coffee, preach. And I don't feel guilty about it. Because that money is specifically earmarked for my happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to do the dreaded B word. I had to do the budget first.
Right.
Just to figure it out.
Yeah.
But now I don't budget. It's done.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I haven't had a formal budget in a while. Every now and then I'll have, I think some people refer to them as a review of my spending journal. And the first time I ever did this, it shocked me how much I was spending on certain categories, like how much I was spending going to Starbucks. I added it up over a week, a month, and figured it out for the year. I was like, I do not want you to be spending thousands of dollars a year going to Starbucks. So I would switch to...
No offense, Starbucks.
Right, yeah, yeah.
We love
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I would go less often, or I'd get a smaller size because I realized it was more of a habit more than anything
right.
else. It was
right.
the habit in the environment and the people that was a large part of the happiness equation.
Right. And you're also looking... Oh, that reminds me. There's a great book called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. Mm-hmm. And he talks about that. He was going down to the cafeteria to buy cookies every day. But what he realized was that he actually valued just going down to the cafeteria with his friends.
Right, yeah.
So that's the habit that he needed to continue, not the actual buying of cookies.
Yeah, and when I was working in the rat race, I remember, you know, every now and then a bunch of the people at work would go out for lunch on a Friday or whatever. And you end up spending a lot of money going out for lunches at work if it becomes a habit. And so I say, you know, I'm going to bring my lunch and bring it to these restaurants
and
eat it if I can. And save some money because at the time, you know, I really had to watch every single dollar back then because I wasn't making a lot of money and you're hanging out with people who are making a lot of money.
Right.
There's the whole keeping up with the Joneses
yes.
phenomenon. So,
yes, there's a chapter in my book called, well, not F, but it's F the Joneses.
Right.
It basically just talks about the comparison game that it's very natural for humans to do. But to your point, I mean, the book talks about the why, sort of the value, mm-hmm. what you value. And then when you do your budget, then you can figure out, well, I don't really value this. Why am I spending money there?
Mm-hmm.
So just divert it.
Yeah, this is why I say this book is different. And it's a book that I think will lend itself well to a lot of people who are on the fence about buying a personal finance book. Because if they think, oh, it's going to be a dry how-to, because a lot of people, they know that they need to do better things with their money, but they don't actually have that behavioral drive to do something. Similar to how having a spending journal and going through the process of just understanding how you spend your money, that imparted this behavioral drive to me to do something about it. I think when you take the approach of looking at how do we think about money in relation to our overall happiness, it gives people a different perspective. And I think once they see it from that perspective, it's going to drive them to do a lot of advice that is in the book. right?
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, there's, yeah, we do talk about budgeting. We talk about insurance. We talk about investing in the book. If I say that off right off the bat, I'm
right. Yeah.
I hope people won't run in the opposite direction. But yeah, it's just a conversation about how to live a better life.
Yeah. No, I like it. So we're running out of time. So as you know, as a regular listener of the podcast, apparently, at the end of the podcast, everyone gets a commercial. I'm guessing you're going to be promoting your book, which is totally cool. So I will turn the floor over to you.
So I thought about this and I just realized I don't really have a commercial because we just talked about the book.
Yeah.
So I'm happy that Happy Go Money is out there, because at the end of the day, I just wanted to, you know, ever since I was a kid, I've always just wanted to tell stories and I've always wanted to help people. And so this is my story, coupled with some common sense, some science, some tried and true, you know, your financial tenets that hopefully people need to, that hopefully will guide people to living a more balanced, fulfilled life. Because I think that's what we struggle with.
Yeah, absolutely. That's good. I'm going to help you along with your commercial.
Please, yes.
So where can people find you on Twitter?
Oh, yes. I am, my handle is Liss Leong, LISLEONG. I am most active actually on Instagram.
Yes, that's true. Great Instagram stories. They are, yeah, I love watching your Instagram stories.
They're my fantastic. Ridiculous life.
No, it's great. It's great. So your Instagram handle?
Is the same, LISLEONG.
Website?
MelissaLeong.com.
And the book is called?
Happy Go Money.
When's it released?
January 8th, new year, new you.
Available where?
Everywhere. You can buy books.
yeah, that's good. So I think that's a pretty good commercial, to the point. One last thing before we go.
Scotch?
Beer can with an English accent. Give it one more shot.
No, why?
More shot. Come on.
Okay, can you say it first and I'll copy you?
Beer can.
That doesn't even sound English to me. Okay. Beer can.
See?
Does that sound
bacon
right?
Bacon in Jamaica. All right, my faithful listeners, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Mostly Money. I hope you enjoyed my guest. We had a great time. I'm going to start drinking the scotch later tonight with that beautiful engraved glass. So thank you again, Melissa.
You're welcome.
Just a reminder to leave a rating on iTunes. And if you want to leave a comment as well, I appreciate it. And I do read them all. That's it for this week. See you next time.